I'll probably tell you ahead of time, I'm not going to get through all of chapter 5. There's too much. I don't think I'm going to. I'm not going to try to. There's just so much material in chapter 5, but we'll try to do the best we can, get as far as we can. This, of course, is the beginning of Matthew's record of the Sermon on the Mount. Used to be, I don't know if it still is, or if they would say it, a classic in English literature for a lot of reasons. One of them is in the King James Version, it was praised as some of the best English, which I don't read King James, so I can't comment on that, I don't know. But anyway, Sermon on the Mount is just lays down some very, very basic principles. And if I understand, especially chapter 5, chapter 5 lays down some real important principles regarding the kingdom of God. And remember, we talked about in chapter 3, the kingdom of God is the rule of God. When you see kingdom, think rule or reign. And the Sermon on the Mount deals with a lot of that, about the rule of God, the reign of God. And that rule and reign is not physical. It's not on earth. It's a reign, it's a rule that is in the heart of people. The reign or the rule of God in the heart of people. And we'll talk more about that as we go along. But anyway, let's begin by looking here in chapter 1. In chapter 5, verse 1, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and which mountain that is, we don't have a clue, and it's really not important. And after he sat down, his disciples came to him. He opened his mouth and began to teach them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Now, we will fill in the blanks there on the rest of those things, but I just wanted to get us started by looking at what kind of people are blessed or blessed, and what does the word blessed mean? I read something recently, and I totally disagreed with it, but someone has recently written a book, workbook, I think, on Sermon on the Mount. And one of the points that he makes, and he's very dogmatic about this, that the word blessed does not mean happy. And I thought, well, I guess that's possible, but I respectfully disagree. I don't know what else it could mean. If you don't like the word happy, use the word joyous or something that is synonymous with that. Because I really think that this is the idea of blessed, people who are blessed. There is one entire New Testament book. You ought to get this one. And the theme of that book is rejoice or be happy. Thank you. That's right. Just got through studying it. That's right, Philippians. Why say that joy or happiness is not something that's found? It's certainly found in Philippians. And this seems to be the theme here. Happy people. Now, drop down for just a minute to verses 10 and 11, where there is sort of a, you wouldn't expect Jesus to say this. Happy people are persecuted people. So we know that the word happy or the word blessed does not, it's not describing people who are walking around every day with a smile on their face, which there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that. But that's not the kind of blessedness, that's not the kind of happiness that he's talking about. It's a happiness of the heart, whether it's seen in the face or not. It's a disposition of heart. And there are some things that Jesus says here that we don't expect to equate with happiness. So we'll go through and take a look at these. And one of the things I want us to see is, especially in verses 3 through 9, I guess, that these are all spiritual things. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn and meek and so forth. I don't understand these Beatitudes to be talking about physical conditions, that poor people are happy people. And again, can poor people be happy? Yes. Physically poor? Yes, absolutely. Not knocking that. I just don't think that's the kind of happiness, the kind of blessedness that he's talking about here. So let's just start there. Blessed are the poor in spirit. That phrase ought to be interpreted by when Jesus said, blessed are the poor, not just the poor, but the poor in spirit. Those who have a spirit, a mindset that is a poverty-like mindset. And that's what this word poor means. If you've traveled to Mexico or traveled to some other countries where there's a high rate of poverty, it's not at all unusual to see people like in Mexico that are standing by the bridge and they're bent over, they're stooped over. And I'm assuming that is real, that's not feigned or put on. And they've got their hand out. This word poor is that word. It talks about abject poverty. People that are looking for something that they don't have and something that they need. And they are going around looking for it and begging for it. That's poor. But it's, as we said, the poor in spirit. The spiritual part of them is poor. The spiritual part of people are looking for something. And without getting too far off on this, I think that what you see many times in people whose lives are a mess, they've got all kinds of emotional problems, they're looking for something spiritual. They're trying to find it in a bottle or a pill, or they're trying to find it in a lifestyle that's whoopee, have fun all the time. That's not where it is. Our poverty must be in spirit. We must realize that in our spirit, the spiritual side of man that's going to live on after we die, there needs to be a poverty there. We'll talk more about this in a moment. And he said, Jesus says, people like that, their spiritual nature is poverty stricken. They're looking for something, looking hard for it. This will, I think, be made clear as we go through here. And by the way, as we go through this, try to think of some Bible character who, when you read through these, you think of that character. If you want to answer that question in a few minutes, I'll give you that chance. Then I'll give you the right answer, of course. See if you can think of someone. And there are lots that you could put on that list. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Okay, a loved one dies. Or bad news is received about a friend or a loved one that has an incurable disease. And we're sad. We cry. And Jesus says, blessed are the poor. And blessed are those who mourn. And again, I'm not knocking the kind of mourning that is physical. We've all been there. Every one of us have been there. And we've mourned over people. Jesus says, blessed are they who mourn. But it's not that kind of mourning. Keeping it in context, if we're right, that these are talking about spiritual conditions, then as the poverty is spiritual. The morning is spiritual. And the morning here, the word, just as the word poor refers to abject poverty, I mean the kind of poverty that just has you bent over and you're begging for some relief. The word mourn here is not talking about just a tear in the eye. We're talking about the kind of mourning that when you're sad, you can hear people when they cry. I don't know if you've ever had that experience or not. They're so sad. They're so moved by whatever that you know it because you can hear them. That's the kind of mourning that's spoken about here. But again, it's not poverty. It's not the loss of friends and loved ones, bad news about people. It's a more important kind of mourning. All right. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. The word meek is not to be taken in the sense of the Simon Milquetoast kind of a cowed fellow that, you know, everybody runs over him. What Old Testament character was the meekest man? Who? Moses. Could Moses lose it from time to time? Got him in trouble, didn't it? The word meek refers to a person. The dictionary definition, and this certainly applies to Moses, the dictionary definition is strength under control. They have the strength to do some things, but in order to attain a higher goal, they do not use that strength. That's the word meek. Those who would be citizens in the kingdom of God, those who are going to let Jesus rule and reign in their heart, can be very strong, assertive people. They may have personalities that are very strong and assertive, but they don't always use that. In order to attain something that's higher and better, they are in self-control. We'll talk about this more as we get to the other parts of all of these. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst, not for physical food, but for righteousness. In the place of righteousness, what could you put? Another word that you could use there. And there's several, they're not just one or two. Huh? Truth, yeah, that's part of it, I think, yeah. Absolutely, yeah, they're looking, this is, in some ways, this is like the poor in spirit and the mourning person. They're looking for something. They're looking for salvation. They're looking for what it is that will bring them to a righteous relationship with God. Blessed are those who have that kind of hunger. We've all seen the athlete, man or woman, who is driven, whether it's a marathon, whatever it might be, they are driven for being the very best they can be in that sport. And nothing wrong with that. And they do things that are unimaginable. We've all seen that kind of a person. Well, this is the idea here. Hunger and thirst for righteousness. Now, if you're following, all of these things that Jesus is talking about here have nothing to do with this earth. Not talking about things on this earth that make you happy, as opposed to the get-rich-quick guys like Joel Osteen, that you pay enough money, and you'll get the car, you'll get the house, you'll get the job that you want. Nothing could be further from the teaching of Jesus than that kind of nonsense. So, hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. The merciful person is what kind of person? Moved by the problems of other people. Somebody else has a problem. And the merciful person is tender to that. They see merciful people and they want to do something. We'll fill this in just a second. Blessed are the peacemakers. I'll skip one. Blessed are the pure in heart. Pure in heart can mean a heart that is free from contaminants, people who aren't looking on the opposite sex with lust, people who aren't stirred by things like that. Could mean that. It really could. But it can also mean or apply to motive for doing something, a pure motive. I would think, and in a lot of these, if you disagree with me, I don't mind that. You can talk to me later. Pure in heart can mean those who have purity in their heart. But it also can mean free from duplicity, from serving God out of a... Well, there is a group of people in the New Testament that serve God from impure motives. What was that group of people's name? Remember? Huh? False teachers. Put a name to them. Jesus tore into them in Matthew 23. Pharisees, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. They were not pure in heart people. They loved the praise of men in the marketplace. They just lived to get that. The pure in heart person serves God out of a pure heart. They want God's approval, not man's. Blessed are the peacemakers. Now here again, a peacemaker. And we think of, and this verse is taken many times by some people to apply to the United Nations and what they're doing. Whatever you think about them, this is not what this assumes, that the greatest peace in the world is peace on earth. When Jesus was, on the night that Jesus was born, what was the message to the shepherds? Peace on earth. In the next 2 weeks or so, you're going to see that verse read out of context and misapplied, I don't know how many times. There needs to be peace on earth. Guess what? The earth was at peace when Jesus was born. And who was seeing to that? Roman soldiers were stationed within 10 miles, probably wherever they were herding their sheep. There was peace. The peace that was announced when Jesus came, Jesus was born that night, was, again, spiritual peace. Peace with God. The greatest peace on earth is a person who can go to bed every night, and it could be North Korea, it could be Afghanistan, but if their heart is in a relationship with God, ruled by God, they have peace in the midst of all that turmoil. Blessed are the peacemakers. What is a peacemaker? Let me just change that word, if you'll let me do that. Blessed are the peace teachers. Those who teach other people about how to have peace with God. You'll not find a more noble work than trying to talk with people. I'm not talking about guys like, get up here and teach publicly. I mean, that would apply to them. Talk about men, talking about women, talking about young people who can find people who are looking for something they don't have in their life. And you're aware of that, and you go to them and say, let me tell you. Let me help you with this and talk to you about how you can have peace. So when you teach people about having peace with God, that's better than anything that anybody ever does at the UN. So blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are those who have been persecuted, those who insult you and so forth. All right, we'll talk about those in a minute. All right, now let's go back here and fill all this in. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Why? And Jesus always explains why. Far. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Now, this is why I think, I drew the conclusion some time ago, that the Sermon on the Mount, and especially chapter 5, is dealing with kingdom principles, kingdom of God principles. God reigning and ruling in the hearts of people. This is what this is about. And if we take the Sermon on the Mount, and especially chapter 5, and try to turn it into something that is this earth, this world, we have, in my judgment, we've missed it big time. Don't take things in the Bible that are spiritual. There are some things, obviously, that the book of Proverbs, good example of that. How to have a happy life upon this earth. That's right, yeah. There's a way to live this life and avoid a lot of pitfalls. So yeah, there are things that talk about living this life and how to live a better life. That's right. But here in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is dealing. He's talking to his disciples, remember? Those were his students. Those were his learners. And if you want to follow me, here's the key, here's the clue, and here's what you're going to have to do. And as I said, Jesus does not fool around. He talks about the easy. He talks about the difficult. So blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Those who are poverty-stricken in their spirits, they are the ones who are going to allow Jesus to reign in their hearts. And this strikes, as I mentioned a moment ago, the Pharisees. A haughtier group of people never existed. You know, narcissism, egomania, they invented it. They were horrible, horrible people. To tell them to be poor in spirit was, you wonder why Jesus was, they wanted to kill Jesus? This, among other things. Because it struck at the root of what they were about. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You want to have God rule in your heart? Then have an impoverished spirit. Realize that your spirit is in need of something, and it's nothing that this world can offer. It is a complete redo of your character. You become a totally, totally different man. One of the men that would apply here would be Saul of Tarsus after he became Paul the Apostle. I don't know if, I'm sure there are others who went through transformations in their conversions. But right now, based on what we read in the scriptures, Paul had to have gone through one of the largest transformations of character ever. That's not to say that we today can, and people realize it, and the Bible talks about that. And people will realize that transformation when we are poor in spirit and allow Jesus to be the ruler of our hearts. He dictates to us how to think, how to talk, how to act. Every facet of our life, he's in control of it. And only those who are poor in spirit will allow Jesus to rule in their heart. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Those who are looking for something in their life, those who just absolutely can't find peace with themselves or other people. And a lot of you have probably seen this, and people have been converted here, people you've converted, they were looking for something. They were miserable, miserable people until they met the Master, until they met Jesus. And they let Jesus rule in their heart, not themselves. They didn't let themselves rule in their heart. They let Jesus rule in their heart. Totally, totally different people. They shall be comforted because Jesus is in control. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth when Jesus comes back to the earth and sets up his kingdom in Jerusalem. You disagreeing with me? Good. Yeah. This is a figure of speech, okay? which you'll find lots of here, inherit the earth to the Old Testament Jew. What would that mean to them back in the day? Inherit the earth would have meant what? Oops, okay. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the land promises that God made to Abraham. They looked for it, found it, lost it. Because they weren't allowing God to rule in their life. So inherit the land to a Jew, and remember now that Matthew wrote to Jews primarily in Matthew. And so for the Jew, and I'm sure there were some here on the mountain that day that Jesus did this sermon, to them, inherit the earth would have meant literally that land promise. But there were enough of these Jews who heard Jesus speak with all these other things that Jesus was talking about, I think they put it together. Things begin to add up, and they realize that just like poor in spirit, mourn, was not talking about something earthly, the same thing with inherit the earth. There is something in store for us that is greater than life on this planet. I cannot imagine any message, and that's what some of these premillennial people are teaching, that when Jesus comes back, the second or third or whatever, how many, whatever kind of millennialist you are, whenever Jesus comes back, the good news, we're going to stay on earth and live. That's the worst news in the world. I mean, there's some places on this earth I love to go to. I love to see the beauty of them, but not for eternity. There's something better than that. And so to inherit the earth, as Jesus and the apostles would explain in their ministries later, had nothing to do with physical things, national things. This is all spiritual. So there was going to be a kingdom, chapter 3, but not a kingdom of this earth, a kingdom of heaven. And that's what they were looking for. So blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. The meek person, as we said a moment ago, is the person who controls their strength. They're not going to be narcissistic people who are always talking the loudest, pumping their fist, rah, 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 not that. They are meek. Their strength is under control, and they're looking for something that's not earthly. All right? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. They shall be satisfied. As I said a moment ago, if you're hungry, you have that burning hunger and thirst, and you can't wait to get that refilled. They can't get that filled. I was thinking about a hike I was on years ago, and I ran out of water. And it was a time of year when you didn't really want to run out of water. And I could relate somewhat to hungering and thirsting. You just crave a bottle of water. Can't wait to get it inside. And when you get it, you just, you're a new person. Same thing here. If we have that kind of desire for righteousness, for salvation, for a relationship with God, that can be satisfied. That can be taken care of. So when you meet the person, as a lot of you I'm sure have, and you talk to people who are hungering and thirsting for something, and you introduce them to Jesus, the good news is, that's why it's called the gospel, the good news is, we can take care of that. We can take care of that pretty quickly. Show you somebody who will satisfy your thirst, will satisfy your hunger. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. This one, verse 7 and verse 9, to me are somewhat similar. Whenever you see someone who is hungering and thirsting, they don't realize that they have a spiritual need, but they do. And the reason their life is such a mess is because that need is not being taken care of. Whenever we see a person like that, it ought to be that instead of walking by them and saying, boy, I just can't believe you're living that way when you keep on walking. The merciful person does what? just like if you saw somebody suffering physically, most of us, I think, would stop and render aid. We'd take care of that. Well, how much more so the person who spiritually is somebody that is hungering, they're thirsting. The merciful, spiritually merciful person will try to take care of that and show them the solution to their problem. So the merciful person is one merciful in reference to other people who need it. How will it, and this raises the idea here, verse 7, how is it going to go with us on the day of judgment? When we stand before God, and perhaps, well, in fact, Matthew 25 presents that judgment scene. When did you see people in various conditions, but you didn't do anything about it? Think about that the next time you see somebody who is either hungering and thirsting physically, or even worse, hungering and thirsting spiritually. And you've got the book. You've got the manual. You've got the how-to book. But you don't try. Blessed are the merciful, for they and they alone shall see God. The pure in heart, or receive mercy, the pure in heart, they shall see God. The word see is not talking about vision. Seeing, a lot of times in the Bible, used figuratively, as I think it is here, is talking about experiencing something. They shall experience God. They'll have a fellowship with God. They'll have a relationship with God. People who are really looking, they're not looking for the acclaim of people, of men. They're looking for a relationship with God. If a person has that kind of a heart, it's a pure heart, looking for something spiritual, not physical, then they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. I have the word called scratched through there. This is a figure of speech. It's used throughout the New Testament where the speaker says, they shall be called, or he shall be called. And it rarely is a reference to what we orally refer to someone as. To be called, just read it without the word called. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be sons of God. So most of the time when you have that construction, be called, try that and just eliminate the word called and think about it in terms of they shall be. Yeah, Wyatt.
So would called be more like referred to as?
It can be. Yeah, it can be.
Considered?
Yeah. That, I think that's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he's not talking to the verbal thing. I don't want to be called a Christian, just called verbally. What I want to do is be a Christian.
I was just trying to figure out what an alternate way to say it would have been that would have made as much sense.
Now, I think the idea here is a higher, more noble sense. And try this as you're reading your New Testament. Whenever you find that word, be called, and just don't read the word called. Leave it out. And they shall be sons of God. Yeah, Brent.
Think of it as, blessed are the peacemakers, for they have earned the right to be called the sons of God.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. All right. Verse 10. And verse 11 and 12. Here we have the things that we don't normally associate, and you'll never, I say this, and I'll be proven wrong maybe, these health and wealth preachers, you will never hear them base a sermon on Matthew 5, 10 through 12. Oh, no. Those guys are not going to be persecuted. They're not going to tell their people, if you pay me enough money, I'll see to it that you're persecuted. That's what Jesus is saying. Except if you not pay me enough money. If you follow me, you're going to be persecuted. That's not a popular message. But Jesus ensured people that that's exactly, well, verse 10 is those who had been. That would have been the Old Testament people that the Jews would have been familiar with. And he's now telling them in verses 11 and 12, that's what awaits you. You follow me, I can guarantee it is not going to be easy. And about 3.5 years later, he showed them how uneasy it was for him. And then after that, tradition, for whatever that's worth, tells us that all of the apostles except John experienced the martyr's death, which I wouldn't doubt at all. All right, we got about 5 minutes. Anything over that we've been through, and I kind of went through this hurriedly, but anything, any questions, any comments here on these Beatitudes? Yes.
One of the things with the peacemakers being called sons of God, there's a relationship there between sons and their father, but I suspect he's talking more about similarity. Like, oh, I can tell whose boy he is.
Yeah.
And people will see us, if we're peacemakers between men and God, they'll say, that's the son of God.
That's
I,
right.
I can see his father in it.
What you just said reminded me, and I've probably told this story here. I've told it, I don't know how many places. But when I lived in McAllen, Texas, years ago, there was a man in the church. I've never known anybody like him at all. And he died much, much younger than we wanted him to die. And at his funeral, they had in a funeral home somewhere in McAllen, and they had anybody who wanted to talk could talk, men, women, Christians, non-Christians, it didn't matter. And I've wished many times somebody had recorded this. There's one woman who spoke about, this guy was named Charles Garner, great, great man, and he worked with this lady, and they worked 10, 12-hour days. They were rough jobs, and she had worked with him, you know, 5-6 days a week, 10, 12 hours a day for, I don't know, 20 years or so. And she got up and she said, there are a lot of you who just knew Charles Sunday and Wednesday. And I was right. She said, I knew him 5-6 days a week and worked closely with him. Then she said this, if Jesus Christ ever comes back to this earth, he will come back as Charles Garner. I sat there and I thought, I don't know that I've heard a greater compliment. What she was saying was, Charles Garner, in everything he said and did, reminded me of Jesus Christ. That came to mind whenever you made that comment. Yeah. Can you imagine in your home, my wife realizes that she's married to somebody that reminds her of Jesus, and the man the same way. My wife reminds me of Jesus. My parents remind me of Jesus. Can you imagine any greater compliment, any greater example that we can give to the people that we influence the most than that? And so much that we read about in the New Testament that deals with that. Okay, one more thing and then I'll quit. Have you been thinking about some Bible character that reminds you of? Let me give you mine, and I was going to do this and I ran out of time. Go back sometime and read Psalm 51. Psalm 51 is what David wrote, his experiences and how he felt when he was made aware of the enormity of his sin with Bathsheba. And not just having adultery, committing adultery with her, but killing her husband on top of that, you know. That psalm, you wonder why God called David a man after his own heart? Read Psalm 51. I'll tell you. And so a David person is this kind of a person. And in so many of the things that David said, and I wish we had time to go through that, so many of the things that David said in Psalm 51 just yell out, Beatitudes, Beatitudes, Beatitudes. Okay, thank you very much.